Welcome to another Salvation by Grace midweek message. Salvation by Grace is the teaching ministry of Grace Christian Assembly, a Sovereign Grace Fellowship in Smyrna, Tennessee. You'll find us on the internet at salvationbygrace.org. We are currently studying the minor prophets of the Old Testament. So grab your Bible and join the congregation of GCA, along with our teaching pastor, Jim McClarty.
Rather than continue our study in the minor prophets tonight, I know that I had said last week that we would continue into the book of Micah, which made Micah particularly excited. He wanted to hear more about his namesake. But instead, we find ourselves at a very interesting calendrical moment right now that I didn't want to pass by. Today, right now, Wednesday, was Nisan 14th, according to the lunar calendar. And so right now, it is evening outside, the even amount of light and dark. That's where we get the word evening. And this is the beginning on the Jewish lunar calendar of the 15th of Nisan, which would be the day of unleavened bread and the beginning of that week-long feast. And during that week-long feast, there's always a first day of the week, first fruits, and that is this coming Sunday, which also happens to be Resurrection Sunday. So this is one of the few years where Passover and Resurrection Sunday actually line up exactly the way that we have always said it lined up in the year that Jesus died. There is a tradition, I grew up with it as a Lutheran boy, the tradition was that Jesus died on a Friday and then got up Sunday morning. And there are plenty of problems with that idea, including the fact that some of the details that we see in the Bible just don't fit into a Friday-Sunday scenario. And so I thought, well, what a perfect opportunity, given the fact that right now we are living in the calendrical landscape that I believe is exactly what happened when Jesus died. By the way, I did go back and ask AI today, when, during the first century, you'd see this exact lineup of the feast days lining up according to the Tuesday to Sunday scenario. And it turns out that in 30 and potentially 31 AD, that happened. Well, we also know that because our calendars have been messed with so many times through the years, that our calendars are way off. And in fact, the Anno Domini AD calendar that we're living on right now missed the birth of Christ by at least 2 years, potentially 4 years. And we know that because we know when Herod died, and he had to be alive when Jesus was born. And so they missed that too. Well, if that is true, if Jesus was born a couple years before 0 AD, not that there was a 0 AD, but before we made that BC AD conversion, which actually happened hundreds of years after Jesus' actual birth. So if that is true, that we missed his birth by a couple of years, then we could also have potentially missed his death by a couple of years rather than being 33 AD. It could have been 30, 31 AD, and that fits perfectly with the scheme that I'm going to lay out for you here tonight. What I plan to do tonight is take a quick look. You can turn back to Exodus if you'd like, Exodus 12. We're going to take a quick look at how these feast days are laid out. And then I'm going to do, boy, a really rapid tour of the events that the Bible says took place Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday of what is classically called the Passion Week. And you're going to see right in there that there is no way that Friday to Sunday morning works. Good Friday, that's an odd tradition. I grew up with Good Friday. Do you know where the word Good Friday comes from? Actually, the Old English word is G-O-U-D-E, good, and it means holy. It means sanctified. So it's the holier the sanctified Friday, and then as language has progressed into westernized, Americanized, we just say good. It's the same way that the Holy Bible was referred to as the good book. It was the holy book. These days, you just hear people say, well, you know, it's in the good book. And they just mean good like beneficial or something. So when you hear Good Friday, remember that originally the history of that word and the history of the tradition, which dates back to the early Catholic Church, has nothing to do with the Bible. You won't find anywhere in the Bible the statement that Jesus died on Friday. Now, you will find that he raised on the first day of the week. And we know that not only because it's plainly said, and we're going to look at it tonight, but also because that was the Feast of First Fruits, and he had to rise on the Feast of First Fruits. So here's the way that the feasts were laid out all the way back in the book of Exodus. This is God speaking to Moses and Aaron and getting the Israelites ready to leave Egypt. And he says to them, starting in verse 1, the Lord said to Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, this month shall be the beginning of months for you. It is to be the first month of the year for you. Speak to all the congregation of Israel, saying, on the 10th of this month, they will each one of them take a lamb for themselves according to their father's households, a lamb for each household. Now, if the household is too small for a lamb, then he and his neighbor nearest to his house are to take one according to the number of persons in them. And according to what each man should eat, you are to divide the lamb. Your lamb is to be an unblemished male, a year old. You may take it from the sheep or from the goats. And you shall keep it. You'll keep it there in your house until the 14th day of that same first month, which we know as the month of Abib or the month of Nisan. You'll keep it until the 14th day of the month, and the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel is to kill it at twilight. Because Israel bases their calendar on a lunar cycle, their day does not begin at midnight the way our day is reckoned. We decide on a solar calendar that a day begins at midnight, but at evening, right around 6 o'clock, is the beginning of the next day. So even right now as I'm speaking, on a lunar calendar, it is Thursday. Thursday has begun because the sun is going down and a new day is beginning. So the evening of the 14th day would be the end of the day of the 13th. And so that evening, the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel is to kill the Passover lamb at twilight. And moreover, they will take some of the blood and put it on the two doorposts and the lintel of their house, and they will eat it inside. They shall roast the flesh that same night, roasted with fire, and they shall eat it with unleavened bread and bitter herbs. And then he goes on about not leaving any over. Look at verse 14. Now this day will be a memorial to you. This is very, very important to recognize that the Passover was always meant to be a memorial. What we're going to do this coming Sunday is a memorial. We are remembering something. Here God tells Israel what it is that they are supposed to remember. They are supposed to remember their deliverance from Egypt and how God passed over them when he sent the death angel through Egypt. Actually, that's what verse 13 says. The blood will be a sign for you on the houses where you live. And when I see the blood, I will pass over you, and no plague will befall you to destroy you when I strike the land of Egypt. So now this day will be a memorial to you, and you shall celebrate it as a feast to Yahweh throughout your generations. You are to celebrate it as a permanent ordinance. And then 7 days you will eat unleavened bread. But on the first day, you shall remove all the leaven from your houses. So in the calendar, the way I'm arguing the Passion Week is laid out, Tuesday would be considered the day of preparation for the Passover, and they would prepare to eat that evening. And we're about to see that that's what Jesus and his apostles did. The next day, which would have been Wednesday, would be the 14th of Nisan, and in the afternoon, they would actually be killing the Passover lambs in the temple. That evening, then, would be the beginning of unleavened bread. And here he is discussing unleavened bread. It is a week-long feast, And so Passover itself becomes the day of preparation for the Feast of Unleavened Bread. That was the last chance to get all the leaven out of your house and out of the camp. For whoever eats anything leavened from the first day until the seventh day, because it's a week-long feast, that person shall be cut off from Israel. On the first day, you shall have a holy assembly. Again, remember that. The first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, which is the 15th of Nisan, regardless of what day of the week that is, the first day is a holy assembly. It is a Sabbath. It is what John is going to call a high Sabbath to separate it from the weekly Sabbath. The weekly Sabbath is always Saturday. But whatever day of the week the 15th of Nisan falls on, that is also a high day. That is a Sabbath. On the first day, you shall have a holy assembly and another holy assembly on the seventh day. No work at all shall be done on them except what must be eaten by every person, and that alone may be prepared by you. You shall also observe the Feast of Unleavened Bread. For on this very day I brought your hosts out of the land of Egypt. Therefore you shall observe this day throughout your generations, again as a permanent ordinance. In the first month, on the 14th day of the month, at evening, you shall eat unleavened bread until the 21st of the month at evening. 7 days there will be no leaven found in your houses, for whoever eats what is leavened, that person will be cut off from the congregation of Israel, whether he is an alien or a native in the land. Okay, so basically what we see here is the 14th of Nisan is Passover. The 15th, which is the night of Passover, the new day begins. That's the start of unleavened bread, and that is a high day. That is a Sabbath. 7 days later, there's another Sabbath. So there is a week-long feast called unleavened bread. Somewhere in that week, there's going to be a first day of the week. And on the first day of the week, that was the Feast of Unleavened Bread. So unleavened bread always fell on the first day of the week. But Passover and unleavened bread could fall on any day of the week as long as it was the 14th day of Nisan. Which, by the way, makes sense because the way that they would determine the beginning of a new month was by watching the moon. And once the moon had gone completely dark, as soon as one of the high priests, one of the leaders, saw a sliver of light, the beginning of a new moon, that was the beginning of the new month. 2 weeks later, on the 14th, full moon. And so that was Passover. That was the mid-month. And then the unleavened bread. So far, have I lost anybody? Okay, so now Jesus walks onto the planet. The rest of the night, we're going to be in the new covenant. I just wanted to establish the Passover and unleavened bread scenario for you. Jesus walks onto the planet. You may not want to flip. You may want to just listen because I'm going to move really fast. In Matthew 12, starting at verse 38, when the scribes and the Pharisees said to him, "Teacher, we want to see a sign from you," he answered and said to them, "An evil and adulterous, a wicked generation, Genea, craves for a sign." You should remember this. We've read through this, and we have talked about it a lot on Sunday mornings. "An evil and adulterous people group craves for a sign, and yet no sign will be given it except the sign of Jonah the prophet. Just as Jonah was 3 days and three nights in the belly of the great fish, so will the Son of Man be 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth." Okay, 3 days, three nights. Really important. Jesus knows how to do math, and he knows what 3 days and three nights are. And he defines what a day and a night is. John 11:9 records Jesus saying, "Are there not 12 hours in the day? If anyone walks in the day, he does not stumble because he sees the light of this world. But if anyone walks during the night, he stumbles because the light is not in him." So Jesus has defined what a day is. It's 12 hours. A night is 12 hours. 3 days and three nights is 72 hours. That's real basic math. Now, there's no way in a Friday to Sunday morning scenario to get 3 days and three nights. The argument typically is that any portion of a day is counted as a day. As we're going to see in a moment, Jesus was taken off the cross because the high day was coming, and they got him off the cross at evening. So the new day was beginning. Feast of Unleavened Bread was beginning. So if he died on Friday, he got into the grave at the beginning of Saturday. But then Sunday morning, the women came to the tomb and found it empty. And how do you get 3 days and three nights? Even if you say part of Friday counts and part of Sunday counts, then Friday, Saturday, Sunday, that's 3 days. But all you have is Friday night and Saturday night. That's not three nights. There's simply no way to make that work numerically, especially when you use Jesus' definition of what a day and a night is, and that he himself would be in the grave for 3 days, three nights. So now you have to ask yourself, did he know what he was talking about? He's defined a day as 12 hours, and he said he's going to be in the grave for 3 days and three nights. If he was in the grave for three partial days and two nights, then he didn't know what he was saying. I argue that he knows exactly what he is saying, and that tradition has just simply taken over so much of the church, and this Friday-Sunday scenario and Good Friday has got everybody kind of thinking, well, we have to make excuses for Jesus and say, well, a portion of a day counts. I argue that he knew exactly what he was talking about. So, the way I understand it was Tuesday, Nisan 13th, which I mentioned just a little bit ago, which was the traditional day of preparation for the Passover. And it was also part of the preparation for the Feast of Unleavened Bread, and that went on until sundown, which was the beginning of Passover. Now, sometimes, as I mentioned, Passover is also referred to as the day of preparation for unleavened bread. And sometimes unleavened bread and Passover are all lumped together, and they just speak of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. You'll see all of that language in the New Testament. Luke 22:7 says, "Then came the first day of unleavened bread, on which the Passover lamb was to be sacrificed. And Jesus sent Peter and John, saying, 'Go and prepare the Passover for us, that we may eat it.'" This is now Tuesday night, the 13th, which is the beginning of the 14th. It's the beginning of the Passover. And just like we just read out of Exodus, Jesus, that night, in keeping with what the Jews did in Egypt, that night he was going to eat the Passover meal. Jesus sent Peter and John, saying, "Go and prepare the Passover for us, so that we may eat it." And they said to him, "Where do you want us to prepare it?" And he said to them, "When you've entered the city, a man will meet you carrying a pitcher of water. Follow him into the house that he enters, and you shall say to the owner of the house, 'The teacher says to you, where is the guest room in which I may eat the Passover with my disciples?' And he will show you a large furnished upper room. Prepare the Passover there." And they left, and they found everything just like he had told them. Wasn't that lucky? They went and saw everything exactly the way he said it was going to be, and they prepared the Passover. You can also read about that in Matthew 26 and in Mark 14. I will tell you, as we continue our Harmony of the Gospels on Sunday morning, we'll get into all these details, and we'll compare Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and put them into the same kind of harmonization that we've been trying to do all the way through that study. So I'm just picking out the verses tonight that demonstrate what I'm arguing for. So that night, Tuesday evening, is the beginning of Wednesday, Nisan the 14th. On that night, according to John 13, that's the night that Jesus washed the apostles' feet. And yet when you read about it, John 13 begins, "Now before the feast of Passover, Jesus, knowing that his hour had come, that he was going to depart the world to his Father, he loved his own who were in the world, and he loved them to the end. And so during supper, the devil, having already put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, the son of Simon, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands and that he had come forth from God and was going back to God, got up from supper and laid aside his garments, and taking a towel, he girded himself. And then he poured water into a basin and began washing the disciples' feet, and he wiped them with the towel with which he was girded. So then Jesus eats, after he has finished that, he eats the Paschal meal with his apostles. Luke 22, 14 says, when the hour had come, he reclined at the table and the apostles with him. And he said to them, I have earnestly desired to eat this Passover with you before I suffer. And I say to you, I shall never again eat it until it is fulfilled in the kingdom of God. So there's just no question that what Jesus was doing was keeping the Passover. He says, I've desired to keep this Passover with you. And there are several references to what he did prior to the Passover supper beginning. Part of all that is that Jesus also pointed out who his betrayer was going to be. John 13, starting at verse 21, when Jesus had said this, he became troubled in his spirit and he testified and said, truly, truly, I say to you, that one of you will betray me. And the disciples began looking at one another, at a loss to know which one he was speaking about. And there was reclining on Jesus' bosom one of the disciples, the one who Jesus loved. We know that that is John. So Simon Peter gestured to him and said to him, tell us who it is that he is speaking of. So he, leaning back thus on Jesus' bosom, said to him, Lord, who is it? And Jesus then answered, that is the one for whom I shall dip the morsel and give it to him. So when he had dipped the morsel, he took and he gave it to Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot. And after that morsel, Satan entered into him. And therefore Jesus said to him, what you do, do quickly. Now one of them was reclining at the table, and they didn't know the purpose for which he had said this. For some were supposing that because Judas had the money box, that Jesus was saying to him, go buy something that we need for the feast, or else that he should give something to the poor. So after receiving the morsel, he went out immediately. Why did I read all that? Because the next phrase says, and it was night. So now we know that Jesus was eating the Passover during the night. It was the night of Nisan the 13th, which was the beginning of Passover the 14th. Jesus warned the apostles then not to desert him, and Peter's denial was also predicted by Jesus at that event. Matthew 26, 31, then Jesus said to them, you shall all fall away because of me this night. For it is written, I will strike down the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock shall be scattered. But after I have been raised, I will go ahead of you to Galilee. But Peter said to him, even though all fall away because of you, I will never fall away. And Jesus said to him, truly I say to you, that this very night, before the rooster crows, you will deny me three times. Peter said to him, even if I have to die with you, I will not deny you. And all the disciples said the same thing too. So then they had the dinner. Now, traditionally, at the end of the Passover meal, there is a series of cups of wine that they drink. And the final one after dinner is called the cup of blessing. And they would traditionally take a little bit of the unleavened bread and set it aside to eat after dinner. And so they're expecting that. They're expecting it when Jesus takes the cup of blessing and when he takes that last bit of bread. What they weren't expecting is that Jesus changed the memorial. The memorial, as we read, had always been, you're going to be taken out of Egypt. You're going to be delivered to your own land. Tonight, the death angel is going to pass through Egypt. And he's going to pass over your houses because of the blood on the doorpost. So this is a memorial. It's a permanent memorial. Every year, do this to remember your deliverance. Jesus instituted the bread and the wine memorial after dinner. Luke 22, 17 says, and when he had taken the cup and given thanks, he said, take this and share it among yourselves. For I say to you, I will not drink of the fruit of the vine from now on until the kingdom of God comes. And when he had taken some bread and given thanks, he broke it and gave it to them, saying, this is my body, which is given for you. Do this in remembrance of me. So now he's changing the focus of the memorial. Notice he did not say, stop doing the memorial. What he said is, this is a permanent ordinance for you. God told you back in Exodus, you have to keep doing this. But now when you do it, instead of remembering your deliverance from Egypt, me, remember me, remember what I did. I'm going to give my body. and I'm going to give it for you. So do this in remembrance of me. And in the same way, he took the cup after he had eaten, so we know which cup that is, and he said, this cup of blessing, which is poured out for you, is the new covenant in my blood. Now, I don't have a lot of time to pick that all apart, but Jesus is declaring that his bloodshed is going to establish the new covenant that's been predicted ever since Jeremiah 31. So he instituted basically that bread and wine memorial, which was an annual memorial. Passover happens once a year. We even know the date that it happens. And so that's why here at GCA we do that memorial once a year, because it's always been a once a year thing. As the night continued, there was what is called the Upper Room Discourse, which is a long section of John 13 and 14 that we will get to on Sunday mornings, so you will get to hear it. I'm just listing things that happened that night. And then they departed for Gethsemane, and then Jesus prayed for them. Luke 22, 39 says, he came out and he proceeded, as was his custom, to the Mount of Olives. And the disciples also followed him. And when he arrived at the place, he said to them, pray that you will not enter into temptation. And then he leaves them and he's in agony. And meanwhile, the apostles are sleeping. Luke 22, 41 says, he withdrew from them about a stone's throw, and he knelt down and he began to pray, saying, Father, if you are willing, remove this cup from me, yet not my will, but your will be done. Now an angel from heaven appeared to him, strengthening him, and being in agony, he was praying very fervently, and his sweat became like great drops of blood falling down upon the ground. And when he rose from prayer, he came to his disciples and found them sleeping from sorrow. And he said to them, why are you sleeping? Get up and pray that you may not enter into temptation. I kind of understand it. They've just had a meal. They've been drinking wine. And now they're in the garden and it's quiet. Of course, they're falling asleep. This is all happening during the night, Tuesday night, leading into Wednesday day. Through that night, Jesus is then arrested and he's tried before the high priest, before Caiaphas, before the scribes and the elders. Luke 22, 66 says, and then when it was day, so through the night, there's the arrest, there's the taking to Caiaphas. When it was finally day, the council of elders of the people assembled, both chief priests and scribes, and they led him away to their council chamber, saying, if you are the Christ, tell us. But he said to them, if I tell you, you will not believe. And if I ask a question, you will not answer. But from now on, the Son of Man will be seated at the right hand of the power of God. And they all said, are you the Son of God then? And he said to them, the NASB says, yes, I am. The phrase more literally is, you say that I am, which is just a Hebraism that is a confirmation. You said it. Your own mouth just spoke it. So then they said to him, what further need do we have of testimony? For we have heard it ourselves from his own mouth. So then it's the morning, and Jesus is being tried, and he's being brought in front of the council, and they are condemning him. And meanwhile, Peter, sure enough, denies Jesus. Matthew 26, 69 says, Peter was sitting outside in the courtyard, and a servant girl came to him and said, you too were with Jesus, the Galilean. But he denied it before all of them, saying, I do not know what you are talking about. And when he had gone out to the gateway, another servant girl saw him and said to those who were there, this man was with Jesus of Nazareth. And again, he denied it with an oath. He swore that he didn't know him. I do not know the man. A little later, the bystanders came up and said to Peter, surely you too are one of them, for even the way that you talk gives you away. And then he began to curse and to swear, and he said, I do not know this man. And immediately the rooster crowed. And Peter remembered the word that Jesus had said, before the rooster crows, you will deny me three times. He went out and wept bitterly. So then as that morning is progressing, Jesus is taken to Pontius Pilate, who then sends him to Herod, and then he comes back to Pilate, That's kind of what's happening in the early morning of Wednesday morning. Luke 23, very first verse, then the whole body of them got up and brought him before Pilate. And they began to accuse him, saying, "We found this man misleading our nation and forbidding to pay taxes to Caesar, and saying that he himself is Christ, a king." So Pilate asked him, saying, "Are you the king of the Jews?" And he answered him and said, "It is as you say." Then Pilate said to the chief priests and to the crowds, "I find no guilt in this man." But they kept insisting, saying, "He stirs up the people, teaching all of Judea, starting from Galilee, even as far as this place." When Pilate heard it, he asked whether the man was a Galilean. And when he learned that he belonged to Herod's jurisdiction, he then sent him to Herod, who himself also was in Jerusalem at that time. Now Herod was very glad when he saw Jesus, for he had wanted to see him for a long time because he had been hearing about him and was hoping to see some miracle, some sign performed by him. And he questioned him at some length, but he answered him nothing. And the chief priests and the scribes were standing there accusing him vehemently. And Herod with his soldiers, after treating him with contempt and mocking him, dressed him in a gorgeous robe and sent him back to Pilate. Now Herod and Pilate became friends with one another that very day, for before that they'd been enemies with each other. So nothing unites people quicker than a common enemy, and they were both after Jesus. So now we're getting to mid-morning, and about mid-morning on Wednesday, Pilate offers to free one prisoner. And the Jews incite the crowd to ask for Barabbas. We read about that in Matthew 27, 15. Now at the feast, the governor was accustomed to release for the people one prisoner whom they wanted. And at that time, they were holding a notorious prisoner called Barabbas. And when the people gathered together, Pilate said to them, "Whom do you want me to release to you, Barabbas or Jesus, who is called Christ?" For he knew that because of envy, the Jewish leaders had handed him over. So then Jesus is mocked. He's sentenced to die. He carries his cross through the street of Jerusalem, and he then finally arrives at Calvary. Matthew 27, 27, then the soldiers of the governor took Jesus into the praetorium, and they gathered the whole Roman cohort with him. And they stripped him, and they put a scarlet robe on him. And after twisting together a crown of thorns, they put it on his head and a reed in his right hand. And they knelt down before him and mocked him and said, "Hail, King of the Jews." And they spat on him, and they took a reed and began to beat him in the head. And after they had mocked him, they took the scarlet robe off him and put his own garments back on him, and they led him away to crucify him. And they were coming out, and they found a man of Cyrene named Simon, whom they pressed into service to bear his cross. So now we're getting to the time of Jesus' crucifixion. There is debate about exactly what time he was crucified, how many hours he actually spent on the cross. Some say that it was a full 6 hours. What we know for sure is at noon, Jesus is already nailed to the cross. And he remains there for 3 hours of darkness as the earth is covered with darkness. And meanwhile, the soldiers are casting lots for his garments. This is all happening, catch this, in the afternoon of Wednesday, Nisan 14th, which is when the Passover lambs are being sacrificed in the temple inside Jerusalem. But just like we saw last night out of the book of Hebrews in men's group, he suffered outside the walls. So he was being crucified outside the city as the Passover lambs were being sacrificed inside the city. Luke 23, 44 tells us, "Now it was about the 6th hour, and darkness fell over the whole land until the 9th hour. So that's noon until 3. Because the sun was obscured and the veil of the temple had been torn in two, and Jesus, crying out with a loud voice, said, "Father, into your hands I commit my spirit." And having said that, he breathed his last. So now we know when it is that he actually died. So then from 3 p.m. until 6 p.m., remember 6 p.m., the evening, the beginning of the next day, that's when Joseph of Arimathea receives permission from Pilate to take the body from the cross and then, along with Nicodemus, go lay it in a nearby unused sepulcher. And the Roman centurion then pierces the side of Christ. Blood and water spill out, proving that he actually was dead, that he actually did give up his life. No one took his life from him. He had the power to give his life up. And they were surprised that he died so quickly. The typical Roman tradition was to break the legs of anybody on a cross to make them die so that they would suffocate so that they couldn't push themselves up to get any more air. And when they came to Jesus, he was already dead, which is why they pierced his side and stuck a spear into him. John 19:31 records, then the Jews, because it was the day of preparation, the 14th, so that the bodies would not remain on the cross on the Sabbath, for that Sabbath was a high day. Yes, it's the first day of unleavened bread. It's not the weekly Sabbath. It is the unleavened bread Sabbath. So they asked Pilate that their legs might be broken so that they could take all the bodies off the cross when this high day was happening, and so that they might be taken away. By the way, that's one of the reasons that Joseph of Arimathea was in such a hurry to get Jesus off the cross and then put him in his own tomb, because it was nearby and the sun was setting and the day was starting where they couldn't do any servile work. They certainly can't be touching a dead body. So the soldiers came and they broke the legs of the first man and of the other who was crucified with him. But coming to Jesus, when they saw that he was already dead, they did not break his legs. But one of the soldiers pierced his side with a spear, and immediately blood and water came out. And he who has seen it has testified, and his testimony is true. That's John speaking of himself. He was there at the foot of the cross. He watched all this happen, and he knows that he is telling the truth so that you also may believe. For these things came to pass to fulfill the scripture that said, not a bone of him shall be broken. And again, another scripture says, they shall look on him whom they pierced. So he had to be pierced. So 6 p.m., the new day is beginning. It is the beginning of the high Sabbath day. Jesus is wrapped in linen. He's laid in the tomb just as that day is beginning. Matthew 27:57, when it was evening, there came a rich man from Arimathea named Joseph, who himself had also been a disciple of Jesus. This man went to Pilate and asked for the body of Jesus. Then Pilate ordered it to be given to him, and Jesus took the body and wrapped it in a clean linen cloth and laid it in his own tomb, which he had hewn into a rock, and he rolled a large stone against the entrance of the tomb, and he went away. Pay attention to this. Mary Magdalene was there, and the other Mary sitting opposite to the grave. In other words, the women knew where he was buried. They watched it. They know where his body is. But it's also the high day. They've got to get home. So Wednesday evening, then, is the beginning of Thursday, which is the high day, observed from sundown Wednesday until sundown Thursday, during which no servile work is done because that day is hallowed. It's a high day. Jesus remains in the tomb the night of Wednesday until the day Thursday. That makes one day, one night. Thursday evening is the beginning of Friday. Now the high day is over, and now the women can leave their home. So what do? The women go buy burial spices to anoint Jesus' body, and we're told specifically that they did it when the Sabbath was passed, that high day Sabbath. Mark 16:1, when the Sabbath was over, Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of James, and Salome bought spices so that they might come and anoint him. Okay, so if the Friday-Sunday scenario is under consideration, when do they have time to do that? Because they don't have time to do it Friday night, because that's the beginning of the high day. And they don't have time to do it Saturday night. Shops aren't going to be open. And then Sunday morning, they go to the grave. He's already gone. When did they go buy spices? Well, they did it between the high day, which was Thursday, and Saturday, which is the weekly Sabbath. There was a Friday in there when they had the freedom to go do that. But beyond that, that's the day that the chief priests and the Pharisees went to meet with Pilate to persuade him to give them guards to watch over the tomb until the third day to prevent the disciples from stealing the body. And that watch is given to them, and that tomb is sealed. Matthew 27, starting at verse 62, says, now on the next day, the day after the preparation, the chief priests and the Pharisees gathered together with Pilate. This is really interesting because that is one of the verses that the Friday to Sunday scenario advocates point to say, look, it says on the next day, the day after the preparation. The day after preparation is Sabbath. Well, of course, nowhere in the Bible anywhere do you find Sabbath day referred to as the day after the day of preparation. It's the Sabbath that's the important part. The day of preparation is getting ready for the Sabbath. And yet they say, well, it says here the next day, the day after the preparation. Now, I'll tell you that in the Greek, that second the day is not in the Greek. And the commas, the punctuation in that sentence, are not in the Greek. In the original Greek, it's all just capital letters run together. There's no punctuation whatsoever. You could just as easily read that sentence, now the next day that followed, the day of the preparation, the chief priests and the Pharisees came together unto Pilate. Oh, well, that makes a whole lot more sense. The next day that followed, the day of preparation, which would be Friday, preparing for the weekly Sabbath, the chief priests and the Pharisees came together to Pilate, because in the Friday to Sunday scenario, there's no room for them to do that. Especially if you consider John 18:28, the Jewish leaders at the palace of the Roman governor, and it was the early morning, it says, but to avoid ceremonial uncleanness, they did not enter the palace because they wanted to be clean to eat the Passover. So considering that they wouldn't even meet with a Gentile or go onto Gentile property so that they could remain clean, would they, on Saturday the Sabbath, go to see Pilate to ask him for a guard and to seal the tomb? No, that wouldn't happen. So when did they do that? In the Friday to Sunday scenario, when did they do that? When did the women buy the spices? When did they go talk to them?
On Friday.
They did it on Friday. They couldn't have done it on the Friday, Saturday, Sunday scenario. There's no room for them to do it. You get my argument?
Yep.
Okay. The chief priests and the Pharisees gathered together with Pilate and said, "Sir, we remember that when he was still alive, that deceiver said that after 3 days I am going to rise again. Therefore, give order that the grave be made secure until the third day. Otherwise, his disciples will come and steal the body and say to all the people that he's risen from the dead, and the last deception will be worse than the first." So Pilate said, you may have your guard. Go, make it as secure as you know how. And they went and made the grave secure. And along with the guard, they set a seal on the stone. So then Jesus remains in the tomb the night of Thursday and all the day of Friday, and that actually makes 2 days and two nights, full 12-hour day and nights. Friday evening, then, is the beginning of Saturday, the weekly Sabbath that needs to be kept. Luke 23:56 says so. Then they returned and they prepared. These are the women who went and bought their spices. Then they returned and prepared the spices and the perfumes. And on the Sabbath, they rested according to the commandment. If they kept the Sabbath according to the commandment, where in the Friday to Sunday scenario did they go by it? It just doesn't fit. So Jesus remains in the tomb the night of Friday and the day of Saturday. Three whole days, three whole nights. After sunset, on Nisan the 17th, the Lord actually rose from the dead, sometime Saturday evening, which is the beginning of Sunday. That's the beginning of first fruits. He was the first fruits of the resurrection. That's why Paul calls him that. He was the Passover lamb. He was in the grave for unleavened bread when his sinless body laid in the grave. And then first fruits, he rose from the dead. And then 50 days later, Pentecost. So he fulfilled all four of the seven feasts, the four that fall in the spring. He fulfilled them perfectly on time down to the actual calendar date. Now the women actually, just before daybreak, I mean during the night, Saturday night, during the night, they arrive at the tomb and they find it. It's already empty. He's already gone. Notice they did not show up at sunrise and watch him rise. He did rise Sunday morning, but that's Saturday night. He didn't rise as the sun was coming up. Here, I'll prove it to you. John 20, verse 1 says, "Now on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene came early to the tomb while it was still dark, and she saw the stone had already been taken away from the tomb." He was already gone. He had already spent 72 actual hours in the grave, exactly like he said. And when the day began, Saturday night, the beginning of Sunday first fruits, soon as first fruits hit, he's up, he's out. He did what he came to do. So, to summarize, Jesus died on Wednesday afternoon, the 14th of Nisan, which was also the day of preparation for the high day Sabbath. He was buried on Thursday, which was Wednesday evening, the beginning of the 15th, as the unleavened bread high day began. The next day was Friday the 16th, which was the day of preparation for the weekly Sabbath. That's the day that the women went and bought the spices and the Jewish leaders were free to move about and went and spoke to Pilate. The next day was Saturday the 17th. That was the actual Sabbath day when they had to wait. They took their spices home and they waited until the beginning of the next day so that they could go and anoint the body of Jesus at sundown on Saturday night. That was the beginning of the first day of the week. Jesus had actually been in the tomb 72 hours, 3 days and 3 nights, and he rose from the grave Sunday morning while it was still dark. The women came to the tomb and they found it actually empty. Okay, why did I go through all of that? To say one thing very clearly. Jesus told the truth. The same Jesus who said things like, "In my Father's house there are many dwelling places," and then he followed that with, "And if it were not so, I would have told you." Because he only tells the truth. He is the truth. He's the embodiment of the truth. So when he says things like, "Jonah, 3 days and three nights." Now, we just got done studying the book of Jonah. How long was Jonah actually in the fish? According to the book of Jonah, 3 days and three nights. Jesus refers back to that and says, just like that, 3 days and three nights, I'm going to be in the heart of the earth 3 days and three nights. You'll notice that nowhere in the Bible does it say that he died on a Friday, and he died perfectly in keeping with the feast days. He satisfied and fulfilled every single one of them because he is indeed the truth and the way and the life, and everything he said about the way to God, everything he said about who he was, everything he said about his death and his resurrection, everything that came out of his mouth was true. And as a kid, when I heard about Good Friday, I wasn't taught about the Good Friday. I sounded very Swedish there when I said that. But even then, as a Lutheran boy growing up, I kept thinking, how does this work? That Friday-Sunday thing doesn't work. And so then as an adult who was able to actually read the Bible and actually study and actually do some research, I was very, very happy and relieved and gratified to find out that the biblical scenario proves that Jesus actually meant every single syllable of everything he said. And that's somebody you can trust.
Amen.
So that's why I went through all that. And because our calendar this year lined up exactly that way.
In your AI thing, did it show
when that happened before?
How that has happened, that like the cycle?
Yeah, and it's not an uncommon thing. I mean, it does come up every so often. But I wanted to know, did it ever happen in the first century? Around 30 AD, did it ever happen? Around his death, did it ever occur? And when it came up and said 30 AD, it did. And people argue 31, too. And a lot of the reason that people don't really know for sure is because of the way our calendar has been messed with so often. So, yes!
So how did Good Friday, do we know how that started, that tradition? How did it move from everything you just stated, Wednesday?
People are lazy.
His answer is people are lazy.
The day before Sabbath, it must be Friday.
That's essentially it. He's not kidding. It's the day before the Sabbath. The day before the Sabbath is Friday. Because they don't understand, especially people who concentrate on only the New Testament. I was listening to a preacher just yesterday who is here in the Smyrna area, and his church has been here since 2016, and he was announcing Sunday morning that he's going to start teaching some stuff out of the Old Testament. Like, that was a major announcement. If you only concentrate on the New Testament, and you don't know the Old Testament feasts, and you don't know how Jesus was satisfying fulfilling the feasts in his death, burial, and resurrection, if all you know is the basic Easter story, you know, well, he died and he got up again, and he died and was buried the day before the Sabbath, and you don't know that the first day of unleavened bread is a high day and also a Sabbath, then you're going to take the easy way out, the lazy way, according to Steve, but it's right. You're going to take the easy way. So that tradition became entrenched through the Catholic Church. It's an old tradition. It's an actually ancient tradition, but as ancient as that tradition is, that's how ancient what I said to you tonight is. That has also always been around. It just wasn't the primary story people were telling because it doesn't go good with eggs and rabbits. So I would rather just tell the Bible story. Is there anything about Christianity that you can name that hasn't been warped by tradition? Good Friday. I mean, how do you get rid of that now? That's ingrained in our brains. Good Friday. They don't even know what good means. But you can't take that away from them. You can't take those traditions away from people. They get upset. But I'm happy to upset people. Anything else?
It always struck me as odd that he was clearly buried at sundown, and yet tradition said he rises at sun up, and there's just no way you can make that into 3 days and three nights. It's just that simple.
Yeah. I was driving down the street here, and the church a block up from us is having an Easter egg hunt. Now, I don't mind if maybe the city of Smyrna wanted to have an Easter egg hunt for the fun of the kids. And what do they know? It's the city. I don't expect the government to understand Christianity. So, okay, have an Easter egg. But when a church does that and ingrains it in the children, that connection between eggs and Easter and bunnies and Easter, what are you feeding these children? You as a church, it is your job to tell the truth, to represent the one who is the way, the truth, and the truth, to actually tell people the truth. And if you start the relationship, I'm sure they're going to say it's an evangelistic outreach. People from the community are going to come in, and this is our opportunity to witness to them and whatever else. But if you start on the ground of dishonesty, then are you a truth teller? Okay, I'm ranting. Okay, what were you going to say?
I was just going to ask a question about Jesus being in the grave, be sure I'm clear, that he's just not dormant there. Doesn't he go to Hades?
There's a whole thing that's happening, yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah. His body is in the grave.
Right.
Like I said earlier, I didn't have time to go into all the detail stuff.
No.
As we work our way into this stuff on Sunday morning, because we're in the Passion Week right now on Sunday mornings, we'll get to all those individual details and we can dig deeper into those.
I think the problem a lot of people have is that they don't go from like where you started in Exodus about the Passover.
Right.
And then they don't know about the Nisan, what did you call it? Nisan,
that's the month, Nisan 14th, yeah.
Yeah, so they don't know those actual, that's not something that's taught, so they just kind of bypass any real truth to just get to, you know, Good Friday to Sunday morning.
Because it is lack of Old Testament teaching.
Yes, but also about, until I came here, I never heard any of that. Yeah.
I contend over and over again, you can't understand the New Testament if you don't understand the Old. Because the whole argument of the New Testament is based in the scriptures, which are the Old Testament. So if you're just doing New Testament study, you're missing vast swaths of the Bible. Yes, sir?
Next week, can you do how he's going to fulfill the fall festivals?
Only if the calendar lines up that way. I could... But I really only want to take this little excursion because of where we're sitting right now.
We've decided you will.
Apparently, I will do that.
Because you explained how he fulfilled the first four, so might as well just go into the...
Just keep going?
Yeah.
Okay.
Except for laboring under the illusion that this is a congregational government.
Yeah, yeah. He thinks this is a democracy. Yeah, I'll do that.
Yeah, I think that would be very
helpful. Okay. Your wish is indeed my command. So, there you go. Now I'm Aladdin. Anything else?
That was worth writing down, which I'm going to have my AI tool do.
I'm so happy you just said that's worth writing down. It's on our website. If you go to our website, I'm so glad you said that so I could say this on tape. If you like that and you want to study it out yourself, if you go to our website and you look at the Q&A section, you'll see something called the Passion Week chart. And if you click on it, there are two different charts on there. One that is a timeline chart that plugs in all the events that I talked about tonight. The other is a Word document with columns that compares each day to its Old Testament parallel and the New Testament events laid out the way that I just said it. So I saved you a lot of trouble. Just go click and you can download those things. Because they do already exist on the website. Apparently, she's already looking it up. All right.
Thank you for listening to this week's Salvation by Grace midweek message. We encourage you to visit our website at salvationbygrace.org for books, articles, and our ever-expanding archive of audio sermons. And we invite you to join us next time when we gather around the Word and study the sovereign grace of God.